Chapter 5, Leases Leasing Agents, the Illinois Real Estate License Act of 2000, Section 5-5 through Section 5-10, provides for a limited scope license for individuals who wish to engage solely in activities related to the leasing of residential real property. For instance, the following activities would appropriately fall under this limited license if the licensee did not engage in any other real estate activities: leasing or renting residential real property, collecting rent for residential real property, attempting, offering, or negotiating to lease, rent, or collect rent for the use of residential real property. The Act establishes specific qualifications and educational requirements for leasing agents, including a written examination. Leasing real estate. A lease is a contract between an owner of real estate and a tenant. It is a contract to transfer the lessor's rights to exclusive possession and use of the property to the tenant for a specified period. The lease establishes the length of time the contract is to run and the amount the lessee is to pay for use of the property. Other rights and obligations of the parties may be set forth as well. In effect, the lease agreement combines two contracts. 1. It is a conveyance of an interest in the real estate. 2. It is a contract to pay rent and assume other obligations. The lessor grants the lessee the right to occupy the real estate and use it for purposes stated in the lease. In return, the landlord receives payment for use of the premises and retains a reversionary right to possession after the lease term expires. The lessor's interest is called a leased fee estate plus reversionary right. The statute of frauds in Illinois requires that lease agreements be in writing to be enforceable in court if they are for more than 1 year. Written leases should be signed by both lessor and lessee. Oral leases of less than 1 year in duration are enforceable in court. This is the only exception of the rule that all real estate contracts in Illinois must be in writing to be enforceable in court. Leasehold estates. A tenant's right to possess real estate for the term of the lease is called a leasehold estate. A leasehold is generally considered personal property. Just as there are several types of freehold estates, there are different kinds of leasehold estates. Estate for years. An estate for years is a leasehold estate that continues for a definite period of time. That period may be years, months, weeks, or even days. And estate for years always has specific beginning and ending dates. When the estate expires, the lessee is required to vacate the premises and surrender possession to the lessor. No notice is required to terminate the estate for years because the lease agreement states a specific expiration date. When the expiration date comes, the lease expires, and the tenant's rights are extinguished. If both parties agree, the estate for years may be terminated before the expiration date. Otherwise, either party may terminate without showing that the lease agreement has been breached. Any extension of the tenancy requires that a new contract be negotiated. As is characteristic of all leases, a tenancy for years gives the lessee the right to occupy and use the leased property according to the terms and covenants contained in the lease agreement. It must be remembered that a lessee has the right to use the premises for the entire lease term. That right is unaffected by the original lessor's death or sale of the property, unless the lease states otherwise. Estate from period to period. An estate from period to period, or periodic tenancy, is created when the landlord and tenant enter into an agreement for an indefinite time. That is, the lease does not contain a specific expiration date. Such a tenancy is created for a specific payment period, for instance, month to month, week to week, or year to year, but continues indefinitely until proper notice of termination is given. Rent is payable at definite intervals. A periodic tenancy is characterized by continuity because it is automatically renewable under the original terms of the agreement until one of the parties gives notice to terminate. In effect, the payment and acceptance of rent extend the lease for another period. And estate from period to period also might be created when a tenant with an estate for years remains in possession or holdover after the lease term expires. If no new lease agreement has been made, a holdover tenancy is created. The landlord's acceptance of rent usually is considered conclusive proof of acceptance of the periodic tenancy. The courts customarily rule that a tenant who holdover can do so for a term equal to the term of the original lease, provided the period is for 1 year or less. For example, a tenant with a lease for 6 months would be entitled to a new 6-month tenancy. However, if the original lease were for 5 years, the holdover tenancy could not exceed 1 year. Some leases stipulate that in the absence of a renewal agreement, a tenant who holds over does so as a month-to-month tenant and can then be terminated with a 30-day notice. Notice required to terminate periodic tenancy. The following notices are required by Illinois statute. Tenancy from year to year, at least 60 days. Written notice is required at any time within the 4-month period prior to the last 60 days of the lease period. Tenancy from month to month, in any periodic estate having a term of less than year to year but greater than week to week, 30 days, written notice is required. Tenancy from week to week, 7 days, written notice is required. Estate at will. An estate at will gives the tenant the right to possess property, with the landlord's consent for an unspecified or uncertain term. And estate at will is a tenancy of indefinite duration. It continues until it is terminated by either party giving proper notice. No definite initial period is specified, as is the case in a periodic tenancy. And estate at will is automatically terminated by the death of either the landlord or tenant. It may be created by express agreement or by operation of law. During the existence of a tenancy at will, the tenant has all the rights and obligations of a lessor-lessee relationship, including the duty to pay rent at regular intervals. Estate at sufferance. An estate at sufferance arises when a tenant who lawfully possessed real property continues in possession of the premises without the landlord's consent after the rights expire. This is also known as a holdover. This estate can arise when a tenant for years fails to surrender possession at the lease's expiration and continues until the landlord completes the eviction process. This estate can also arise when a tenant is in breach of the lease, has been informed of the breach, and has not cured the breach within time limits specified by Illinois law. In Illinois, a landlord has the option of considering an estate at sufferance as being a willful withholding of possessions, in which case the landlord is entitled to charge double rent. Qualifying tenants. Lease application. All interested prospects, whether residential, industrial, or commercial, should be required to complete a written lease application. The manager should retain these completed applications for the term of the tenancy. The forms should be saved even if the tenant does not lease, as they can provide written evidence that the manager has accepted tenants based on sound business reasons and not in an illegal discriminatory way. This is particularly important in residential leasing. The lease application form is critical, as the manager requires additional information before making a final decision to lease to this particular applicant. The form should be clear, concise, and consistent, and cover as many topics as necessary for the manager and owner to make an informed decision to accept or reject this applicant. When dealing with a company or organization, the manager should always attempt to work with the person who has authority to enter into contractual agreements on behalf of that company or organization. A residential lease application gathers information and also includes acknowledgement from the tenant that the landlord may verify all information found on the application. The application includes permission to verify not only rental history but also court and criminal records. All tenants must be financially sound, but especially commercial and industrial tenants, because of the greater net worth of the lease. The application asks for business location, organizational structure, and banking references. Space requirements and any other special needs should be discussed before starting the lease application. Evaluation of data identity. It is important to verify the identity of a residential or commercial applicant. At the very least, the prospect must provide some form of identification, a rental history, financial status, and several references. Residential prospects can supply a government-issued picture ID. Business prospects may be asked for a summary of their long-range business objectives. Most lease applications include a request to all the manager to check not only the applicant's credit history, but also their criminal history. Rental history. The stability of the tenant's rental history will influence the manager's or owner's final decision. Unless there are valid reasons for doing so, a family or a company moving frequently is often considered a poor rental risk. It is expensive to have a constantly changing pool of tenants, so the manager should seek a family or company that will stay for a long time. Financial status. It is in the owner's best interests to verify references given on the application. The rationale behind validating a prospect's financial references is simple. Slow or erratic payers generally retain this pattern when making mortgage or rental payments, whereas prompt and steady payers are consistent in meeting their obligations. A prospective tenant with a history of erratic and delinquent payments should be turned down. If there are only one or two lapses in an otherwise satisfactory record, though, the prospect should be invited to explain these lapses before a final decision is made. Residential brief phone calls to banking and employment references used to be sufficient, but today most managers rely on a credit report. To avoid any appearance of any illegal discriminatory practices in violation of fair housing laws, the manager must show consistency. In other words, the manager should require a credit report from every applicant if required of one. Credit report. A credit report may be obtained legally only with the applicant's consent and is a history of how a person pays his or her bills. Therefore, the property manager must set up a procedure for obtaining permission. Many managers charge a non-refundable application fee to help defray the costs involved in obtaining a credit report. If the fee is non-refundable, then this should be stated clearly on the application form. The credit bureau will send the manager a report on the financial reliability of the prospect. This statement is an itemization of the status of the prospect's past and current accounts, usually identified by industry. The report will note bankruptcies, collections, charge-off accounts, and current obligations. The quantity and dates of all payments are listed on the report along with an indication of their regularity. The letter indicates the type of account and the number refers to the payment pattern. Managers want to know even more about the prospect. A number of companies specialize in searching public records on behalf of the owner or property manager. These searches can include past rental performance history, nationwide credit reports, and outstanding bad check reports, as well as criminal history reports. Rental performance histories contain information such as evictions, past due balances, noise complaints, insufficient funds checks, and damages to the rental unit. Lease agreements. Requirements of a valid lease. A lease is a form of contract. To be valid, a lease must meet essentially the same requirements as any other contract. Capacity to contract. The parties must have the legal capacity to contract. Legal objectives. The objectives of the lease must be legal. Offer and acceptance. The parties must reach a mutual agreement on all the terms of the contract. Consideration. The lease must be supported by valid consideration. Rent is the normal consideration given for the right to occupy the leased premises. However, the payment of rent is not essential as long as consideration was granted in creating the lease itself. Sometimes, for instance, this consideration is labor performed on the property. Because a lease is a contract, it is not subject to subsequent changes in the rent or other terms unless these changes are in writing and executed, in the same manner as the original lease. The leased premises should be clearly described. If the lease is for part of a building, such as an apartment, the space itself or the apartment designation should be described specifically. If supplemental space is to be included, the lease should clearly identify it. Possession of premises. The lessor, as the owner of the real estate, is usually bound by the implied covenant of quiet enjoyment. The covenant of quiet enjoyment is a presumed promise by the lessor that the lessee may take possession of the premises. The landlord further guarantees that he will not interfere in the tenant's possession or use of the property. The lease may allow the landlord to enter the property to perform maintenance, to make repairs, or for other stated purposes. The tenant's permission is usually required. If the premises are occupied by a holdover tenant or an adverse claimant at the beginning of the new lease period, the landlord must initiate the eviction process to obtain possession in Illinois. Use of premises. A lessor may restrict a lessee's use of the premises through provisions included in the lease. Use restrictions are particularly common in leases for stores or commercial space. For example, a lease may provide that the leased premises are to be used only as a real estate office and for no other purpose. In the absence of such clear limitation, a lessee may use the premises for any lawful purpose. Term of lease. The term of a lease is the period for which the lease will run. It should be stated precisely, including the beginning and ending dates, together with a statement of the total period of the lease. For instance, a lease might run for a term of 30 years beginning June 1, 2011 and ending May 31, 2041. A perpetual lease for an inordinate amount of time or an indefinite term usually will be ruled invalid. Security deposit. Most leases require that the tenant provide some form of security deposit to be held by the landlord during the lease term. If the tenant defaults on payment of rent or destroys the premises, the lessor may keep all or part of the deposit to compensate for the loss. Some state laws set maximum amounts for security deposits and specify how they must be handled. Some prohibit security deposits from being used for both non-payment of rent and property damage. Some require that lessees receive annual interest on their security deposits. In Illinois, landlords who receive security deposits on residential leases of units in properties containing five or more units may not withhold any part of a security deposit as compensation for property damage, unless they give the tenant an itemized statement listing the alleged damage. This statement must be delivered within 30 days of the date on which the premises are vacated. If the statement is not furnished, the landlord must return the entire security deposit within 45 days of the premises being vacated. Any landlord who is found by a court to have failed to comply with this requirement, or who has done so in bad faith, must pay the tenant double the security deposit due plus court costs and attorney's fees. Illinois lessees are entitled to receive annual interest on their security deposits. Landlords who receive security deposits on residential leases of units in properties of 25 or more units, on deposits held for more than 6 months, are required to pay interest from the date of the deposit at a rate equal to the interest paid on a minimum deposit passbook savings account of the state's largest commercial bank, measured by total assets, with its main banking facilities located in Illinois. Any landlord who is found by a court to have willfully withheld interest on a tenant's security deposit must pay the tenant an amount equal to the security deposit plus the tenant's court costs and attorney's fees. Note: Chicago's security deposit rules and interest rates are governed by the Chicago Residential Landlord and Tenant Ordinance. A lease should specify whether a payment is a security deposit or an advance rental. If it is a security deposit, the tenant is usually not entitled to apply it to the final month's rent. If it is an advance rental, the landlord must treat it as income for tax purposes. Improvements. Neither the landlord nor the tenant is required to make any improvements to the leased property. The tenant may, however, make improvements with the landlord's permission. In most residential properties, any alterations become the property of the landlord. However, in many commercial leases, tenants are permitted to install trade fixtures, those articles attached to a rental space that are required by tenants to conduct their businesses. Trade fixtures may be removed before the lease expires, provided the tenant restores the premises to their previous condition, with allowance for the wear and tear of normal use. Accessibility. The Federal Fair Housing Act makes it illegal to discriminate against prospective tenants on the basis of physical disability. Tenants with disabilities must be permitted to make reasonable modifications to a property at their own expense. However, if the modifications would interfere with a future tenant's use, the landlord may require that the premises be restored to their original condition at the end of the lease term at the tenant's expense. The landlord can require that an amount to cover the restoration be held in an escrow account. Maintenance of premises. Many states require a lessor of residential property to maintain the dwelling units in a habitable condition. Landlords must make any necessary repairs to common areas such as hallways, stairs, and elevators, and they must maintain safety features such as fire sprinklers and smoke alarms. The tenant does not have to make any repairs, but must return the premises in the same condition they were received, with allowances for ordinary wear and tear. The Illinois Supreme Court first confirmed the concept of an implied warranty of habitability in residential tenancies in 1972. Since then, Illinois courts have repeatedly confirmed and amplified the warranty. A landlord must deliver and maintain throughout the duration of the lease any residential leasehold free from defects that would render the use of the dwelling unsafe or unsanitary and unfit for human occupancy. Nothing may be present on the premises that could seriously endanger the life, health, or safety of the tenant. The conditions that violate the implied warranty of habitability vary depending on the state and jurisdiction where the premises are located. Generally, a landlord can be in violation by failing to provide access to drinkable and hot water, heat during cold weather, working electricity, a smoke detector, a working bathroom and toilet, removal of rodent or insect infestation, Building code violations, a tenant must give the landlord notice of a defect and reasonable time in which to cure it. As a remedy, the tenant may choose to move out and terminate the lease if repairs are not made within a reasonable time. Stay and repair the problem himself and deduct the repair costs from the next month's rent. Sue for any damages resulting from the defective condition. The obligation to pay rent for damaged or destroyed premises differs depending on the type of property and the lease. Usually, residential tenants are permitted to reduce their rent payments in proportion to the amount of space they are unable to use. Likewise, tenants who lease only part of a building, such as office or commercial space, generally are not required to continue to pay rent after the leased premises are destroyed. In fact, in some states, if the property was destroyed as a result of the landlord's negligence, the tenant can recover damages. Assignment and subleasing. When a tenant transfers all his leasehold interests by leasing them to another person, the lease has been assigned. The new tenant is legally obligated for all the promises the original tenant made in the lease. When a tenant transfers less than all the leasehold interests by leasing them to a new tenant, the original tenant has subleased the property. The original tenant remains responsible for rent being paid by the new tenant and for any damage done to the rental during the lease term. The new tenant is responsible only to the original tenant to pay the rent due. Assignment and subleasing are only allowed when a lease specifically permits them. In both assignments and subleases, details of the new arrangement should be in writing. In most cases, the sublease or assignment of a lease does not relieve the original lessee of the obligation to pay rent. The landlord may, however, agree to waive the former tenant's liability. Most leases prohibit a lessee from assigning or subletting without the lessor's consent. This permits the lessor to retain control over the occupancy of the leased premises. As a rule, the lessor must not unreasonably withhold consent. The sublessor's interest in the real estate is known as a sandwich lease. Non-disturbance clause. A non-disturbance clause is a mortgage clause in the landlord's mortgage document, stating that the lender agrees not to terminate the tenancies of lessees who pay their rent should the lender foreclose on the landlord's building. Options. A lease may contain an option that grants the lessee the privilege of renewing the lease. Some leases grant the lessee the option to purchase the leased premises. This option normally allows the tenant the right to purchase the property at a predetermined price within a certain time period, either during the lease or a short time after the lease has expired. The lease might also contain a right of first refusal clause, allowing the tenant the opportunity to buy the property before the owner accepts an offer from another party. Although it is not required, the owner may give the tenant credit toward the purchase price for some percentage of the rent paid. The lease agreement is a primary contract over the option to purchase. Types of leases. The manner in which rent is determined indicates the type of lease that exists. There are three basic types of leases: 1. Gross lease, 2. Net lease, 3. Percentage lease. Gross lease. In a gross lease, the tenant pays a fixed rent, and the landlord pays all taxes, insurance, repairs, utilities, etc., connected with the property. This is typically the type of rent structure involved in apartment rentals. Net lease. In a net lease, the tenant pays a base rent and all or some of the property charges, depending on whether they are a single tenant in the building or one of many tenants in a building. The monthly base rental is net income for the landlord after operating costs have been paid by the tenants, not including debt service. Leases for entire commercial or industrial buildings and the land on which they are located, ground leases, and long-term leases, are usually net leases. In a triple net lease or net-net-net lease, the tenant pays all operating and other expenses in addition to the base rent. These expenses include CAM, common area maintenance and building operating expenses. Taxes, usually property taxes, but could be other taxes. Insurance, casualty, liability, etc. Percentage lease. Either a gross lease or a net lease may be a percentage lease. The rent is based on a minimum fixed rental fee, base rent, plus a percentage of the annual gross income received by the tenant doing business on the leased property. This type of lease is used for retail businesses and restaurants. The percentage charged is negotiable and varies depending on the nature of the business, the location of the property, and general economic conditions. It is usually calculated at the end of the year and is payable in one payment. Variable lease. Several types of leases allow for increases in the base rent during the lease periods. One of the more common is the graduated lease, which provides for specified base rent increases at set future dates. Another is the index lease, which allows the base rent to be increased or decreased periodically, in relation to changes in the consumer price index or some other indicator. Ground lease. When a landowner leases unimproved land to a tenant who agrees to erect a building on the land, the lease is usually referred to as a ground lease. Ground leases usually involve separate ownership of the land and buildings. These leases must be for a long enough term to make the transaction desirable to the tenant investing in the building, and often run for terms of 50 years up to 99 years. Ground leases are generally net leases. The lessee must pay rent on the ground as well as real estate taxes, insurance, upkeep, and repairs. Discharge of leases. As with any contract, a lease is discharged when the contract terminates. Termination can occur when all parties have fully performed their obligations under the agreement. In addition, the parties may agree to cancel the lease. If the tenant, for instance, offers to surrender the leasehold interest and the landlord accepts the tenant's offer, the lease is terminated. A tenant who simply abandons leased property remains liable for the terms of the lease, including the rent. The terms of the lease will usually indicate whether the landlord is obligated to try to re-rent the space, which is the case in Illinois. If the landlord intends to sue for unpaid rent, Illinois requires an attempt to mitigate damages by re-renting the premises to limit the amount owed. The lease does not terminate if the parties die or if the property is sold. There are two exceptions to this general rule. Life estate. A lease from the owner of a life estate ends with then tenant's life ends. Tenancy at will. The death of either party terminates a tenancy at will in all other cases. The heirs of a deceased landlord are bound by the terms of existing leases. If leased real estate is sold or otherwise conveyed, the new landlord takes the property subject to the rights of tenants. A lease agreement may, however, contain language that permits a new landlord to terminate existing leases. The clause, commonly known as a sale clause, requires that the tenants be given some period of notice before the termination. Because the new owner has taken title subject to the rights of the tenants, the sale clause enables the new landlord to claim possession and negotiate new leases under his own terms and conditions. A tenancy may also be terminated by operation of law and in a bankruptcy or condemnation proceeding. Breach of lease. When a tenant breaches any lease provision, the landlord may sue the tenant to obtain a judgment to cover past due rent, damages to the premises, or other defaults. When a landlord breaches any lease provision, the tenant is entitled to certain remedies. The right and responsibilities of the landlord-tenant relationship are usually governed by state law. If a tenant defaults on the payment of rent, the landlord has two options. 5-day notice, monetary breach. He may elect to serve the tenant with 5 days written notice, demanding payment of the delinquent rent within 5 days after the notice is received. If the tenant fails to pay the rent, the landlord may terminate the lease automatically and sue for possession, without further notice. If the tenant pays the past due rent, the lease continues in full force. 10-day notice, non-monetary breach. Alternatively, the landlord may terminate the tenancy by service the tenant with 10 days notice, including a demand for possession. After the 10-day period expires, the landlord may sue for possession without further notice, even if the default is cured. Landlord's remedies. Actual eviction. When a tenant breaches a lease or improperly retains leased premises, the landlord may regain possession through a legal process known as actual eviction. The landlord must serve a notice on the tenant before commencing the lawsuit. Most lease terms require at least a 10-day notice in the case of default. In many states, however, only a 5-day notice is necessary when the tenant defaults in the payment of rent. When a court issues a judgment for possession to a landlord, the tenant must vacate the property. If the tenant fails to leave, the landlord can have the judgment enforced by a court officer, who forcibly removes the tenant and the tenant's possessions. In Illinois, this would be the sheriff. The landlord then has the right to re-enter and regain possession of the property. In Illinois, a landlord seeking actual eviction of a tenant must file an action called a forcible entry and detainer. It can be used when a tenancy has expired by default, by its terms, by operation of law, or by proper notice. The suit should be filed in the circuit court of the county in which the property is located. If the court rules in favor of the landlord, a judgment for possession and money damages in some cases, where the landlord has a reasonable expectation to obtain the funds from the tenant, will be entered, and an order of possession will be issued by the clerk of the court. The tenant must then leave peaceably, removing all his property from the premises. Traditionally, however, if a residential tenant personally appears in court and the landlord prevails, the court will delay issuing the order for a reasonable period to allow the tenant to find alternative housing. When a tenant refuses to vacate peaceably after a judgment for possession has been entered, the landlord must deliver the order to the sheriff, who will forcibly evict the tenant. The landlord then has the right to re-enter and regain possession of the property. Until a judgment for possession is issued, the landlord must be careful not to harass the tenant in any manner, such as locking the tenant out of the property, impounding the tenant's possessions, or disconnecting utilities. Illinois landlords have no right to self-help, that is, they may not forcibly remove a tenant without following the proper legal procedures. Tenants' remedies: constructive eviction. If a landlord breaches any clause of a lease agreement, the tenant has the right to sue and recover damages against the landlord. If the leased premises become unusable for the purpose stated in the lease, the tenant may have the right to abandon them. This action, called constructive eviction, terminates the lease agreement. The tenant must prove that the premises have become unusable because of the conscious neglect of the landlord. To claim constructive eviction, the tenant must leave the premises while the conditions that made the premises inhabitable exist.